And I want to read you one more little poem that my girlfriend wrote after the Holocaust. Title of it is Scapegoats Again by Eva Gross. Hitler never died. He only slumbers. If in any generation, at some part of the globe, a nation sinks into a slump, those with the loudest voice search for a scapegoat. Hitler awakens, wearing a different suit, shouting in a different language, but carries the same message of hate. Camouflage their shortcomings. The people are pleased to follow him. These are powerful thoughts. Let's hope it never happens. Now, when I speak to the children, the students, I leave them with three things to remember. Number one, next to your health, the most important commodity treasure you have is your freedom. We are so blessed in this country that practices freedom and liberty to everyone, that let's work hard in your future to keep it that way. Number two, think very seriously before you hate. I'm not telling you to hate or not to hate. That is up to your conscience. But at least think about, why do I hate? Because all genocide stems from hatred. So let's see what we can do to eliminate that at least a little bit. And thirdly, stand up to the deniers. I mean, this is the most ridiculous thing on earth. If the deniers were existing 70 years ago, okay, we didn't have all this high-tech stuff. But today, when everything is at your fingertip on that internet, not only that, but concentration camps in Germany are kept functioning to show the young people what it was and how bad it was and so on. But they still do it. So just tell them, let them experience it for 1 month, not for years and years of torture. They'll wake up to it. So I think that I covered pretty much of everything. Also, I usually mention when I start talking that Hitler's dislike of people was not only against the Jewish people. He was against the Jehovah Witnesses, the homosexuals, the gypsies, in addition to the Jewish people. And these non-Jewish people suffered equal tragedy. They were tortured and so forth. Matter of fact, I was just back in the Camp Buchenwald for a reunion this last spring, in March, and it was an interfaith gathering. So many of the prisoners, non-Jewish prisoners from different European countries, were present as well. A matter of fact, they gave us, five of us with five different languages, a little slip of paper the management did to express our acknowledgement. So yeah, the little paper said, we are grateful forever to the United States, Canada, Britain, and Russia for their armed services for liberating us. And so another invitation I would like to extend to you, when you are in Chicago, plan an extra 3 hours to go to the Illinois Holocaust Museum, which is in the suburb of Skokie, which is a half-hour car ride from downtown. And when you walk into the museum, it's like opening up a history book. The way it's set up, you walk in, it's 1933, and the artifacts, all the way, the different exhibits, very explanatory, because it's geared for children to learn. Because in Illinois, it is mandatory to teach Holocaust education in middle and high school level. So by the time these children come to the museum, they see the actual thing. And then for everyone who has time to do it, because it's educational, and we go to other museums and learn a lot, so this one, I had to throw in a little plug. So anyhow, if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer. I'm sorry.
How did you survive?
You believe? Father, there are no other explanations. healthy girls like I was, same age, whatever, what have they done? They're God. You know, there's a good saying in the Jewish language, things are ordained, and I'm a great believer of that. You know, certain things, I mean, doesn't belong to this conversation, but I want to share with you. My husband and I, in the 1980s, were overcome by carbon monoxide poisoning in our home. I mean, we were goners. I am here to talk to you, so give you an answer to that. But truly, I mean, whatever the good Lord wants, I am. And did I tell you my mantra? Okay, now you learn something. All right, it goes like this. You have to have faith, fantasy, drive, determination, and belief that tomorrow will be better. And I am delighted that I had a lovely young audience here as well, because they are our future. So the little one was welcome as well. But usually, you know, when we go to schools, like, not under 8th grade, you know, because my daughter comes with me to schools, and she goes and checks out the kids and find out what they know. So then she whispers to me, "Mother, don't use any big words." So it all depends. But I am really grateful that you gathered here, and grateful to Dawn and her group of workers for arranging this, because what our motto is, that never again, should really mean never again. Okay? That's our mantra, because a situation like this of indiscriminately killing of millions of people, it's not in our good life. So just whatever. You have some thoughts? Come on, don't be bashful. Come here, come. I don't bite.
Thank you for coming. I appreciate very powerful. I think God chose the Jewish people. I think when you try to harm God's chosen, bad things will happen throughout history. And I appreciate your talk, and I want to know if I could give you a hug.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, come on. Come on. I told you I'm a good grandma. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I'm very humbled to meet you. What you've gone through, I just cannot comprehend. I had a friend that I worked with. She came from Hungary with her parents. I had no idea that maybe in her lifetime she had some of this. But when you were chosen to go to that factory because you were a stronger person, your shoulders, what did you eat? Were you given better food?
Honey, you had no time to think or analyze. It was a matter of routine. You know, you followed the orders. Orders. And nothing else. But there are so many little nuances that, you know, in my talk I bring up for the audience to know about. But at the time, you don't think of it. You just follow orders, whatever
is
there.
This is what you had to do to survive. You did this every day. That's it.
I don't have the answer.
Oh, but I'm so...
I don't have the answer. You know,
I'm just so pleased.
But I tell you something. The reason we are talking, like I said before, I mean, after all, I am 29 turned upside down. So... you know, to come and go to schools and interact with the children and so forth. I mean, I do it from my heart, but I'm just saying that, you know,
tell the story again and again and again.
Well, thank you. I intend to. I am speaking at Loyola University to graduate students in a few weeks. Thank you.
Did you maintain your contact with the people that you were in prison with?
Oh, contact with my campmates?
Yes.
Yes. There's one young lady who lives about 5 minutes from my home, and we didn't know about each other's background until we met in Chicago, and then we started getting together and becoming very close. One of them passed away recently, but there is one young lady who returned back to Hungary and remained there post-war. And when I told you earlier that I was at Buchenwald camp this last March, she came there from Hungary. And it was the most beautiful meeting, because what she has done with her testimony, she's a frustrated ballerina at age 93, and a very good one, by the way. And she created a film by the form of the ballerina dance explaining the history. And she travels with that all over Europe. So we met in Germany, and it was amazing and wonderful. And she's 1,000 times smarter than I am. And she speaks 4 languages fluently, and all the good educations and knowledge she uses and so forth. So she's the one left, and pretty much we're meeting God. The time is whatever, but there were a couple of others, but unfortunately they passed on. Yeah, you're welcome.
I have a question.
Yeah.
When you said that you, at that time when you were in somewhere in the ditch, and then you crawled to the barn, about how many people crawled
to the barn? In that barn, we were about 25. But then we were 1,000 gathered in about a 30-mile radius. They were all over. They were in people's attics. One group hid under a haystack. I mean, unimaginable places.
Yes.
I mean, you know something? When you are at the last step of your life, you attempt anything. There's nothing to be afraid of. You're as brave as a soldier.
Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
In Dennis Avery's book, The Man Who Broke Into Auschwitz, he mentioned many stories of prisoners who made small miracle sacrifices to help others survive. Were you witness to any of these small gifts that prisoners?
No, I didn't. Well, Auschwitz, you know, we were, us 1,000 Hungarians, we were there only like 2 months. We arrived in June, mid-June, and by August 8th, we were shipped out. So you really stuck to your home friends in the little family group and never had a, you know, just, it was too chaotic. That's the only way I can describe it. It was like a Tower of Babel. You know, just you stuck with your hometown friends so you could talk with them and then understand one another better. Not that we didn't meet other people, but it was just more comfortable.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, you're welcome. Is that my sister-in-law? Oh my God! No! What a surprise! Oh my love! Oh, excuse us. Oh. Okay, you'll talk later. Who gave me this? And she brought her whole family. That is the frosting on the cake. They live in West Bloomfield, and they drove up here. And
well, Magda, you traveled thousands of miles to tell your story. We couldn't travel all those miles, but we did spend an hour in the car to hear you again, because we have heard you before, and every time it's overwhelming and heartwarming that we have you with us.
Well, I tell you, this is the surprise of surprises, and I love you all. I loved you before.
And we all love you, and we're all here, all the little kids.
Well,
little.
Looking forward, visiting to the whole crew. Thank you. How about that? How about that? I tell you, that's another profit I made by marrying a Chicago-born young man, because her husband and my brother, my husband and her husband were brothers. So that's when I think I may have mentioned that my children inherited one set of grandparents and relatives versus other survivors, because when both were survivors, you know, there are no remnants of the rest of the family. Well, this is really a memorable place. I will remember this church forever and ever and ever. Thank you. What did I forget to say? Well, I think I mentioned, yes? Germany today? This will blow you all away. Here I talked about the Nazis, right? Now I'm going to talk about my German boyfriend. Okay? Let me put it this way. About 60 years ago, the Church of Ascension in Germany, the directors were wondering, what could we do to help humanity? The war-torn countries, disabled people, not a Jewish issue, just helping people. And they formed a group where they educated high school graduates, boys and girls, to send them out into the world to carry out this mission. And, you know, they had to prepare them. I mean, these are 18-year-old kids to go to another country or whatever. I mean, you have to watch out. So nevertheless, our Holocaust Museum heard about their existence. So now, the directors got together. Well, what are we going to do? Should we invite some of these children to our museum? But will they interact with the survivor? Or will the survivor interact with the German child? So the director lady stood up and said, if we don't try it, how will we know it? Ladies and gentlemen, it's like the frosting on the cake. I can talk to you hours about my German boyfriend, but I won't keep you that long. So how did it all happen? So once they got to know these children, the leadership got together with German consulate, and, you know, all the details, and this organization from Germany, it's called ARSP, Action Reconciliation Service for Peace. That's their title. So all the legal details were arranged, and they would send two children per year to our Holocaust Museum and to one of the nursing homes or old age unit, whatever. Okay, so now these children came to a new land and new people and so forth, and their job was at the museum to escort the tours or help out in many ways, just an all-around helper. I happened to spend a lot of time at the museum because our old museum, I lived across the street from. So many times, they would call me the last minute if speaker didn't show. One time, they even pulled me out of the beauty shop. And I said, hold the audience, I'll be there. But nevertheless, so this particular young man named Gregor was a 19-year-old young man and worked at the Holocaust Museum. So he had to travel two buses from the city into the suburb to come to the job. I said to him, I said, Gregor, you know what? Bring a toothbrush. I have an empty bedroom. I'll feed you. And then you'll have 2.5 seconds to walk across the street to go to work in the blizzardy cold winter. That was 13 years ago, ladies and gentlemen. To this day, we email on a daily basis almost. He knows everything about my life. And by now he's 32 years old, married, and has a darling little boy. So when we were in Germany in March that I told earlier, he, his wife, child, and parents, they live in Berlin. And my visit to Germany was Weimar, where the concentration camp is. They took an apartment in Weimar to spend the entire stay with us. So that's my German connection. But usually, you know, I love to share it because that's a fabulous organization. I mean, they do a lot of good deed around the world. Oh, yes, sir. Did anybody ever
resist what the Germans were telling
them? They resist? Oh, that's a very big word, young man. Honey, we were so scared of them, and they were so brutal. There was no such a thing. No, I mean, we were so supervised that if anybody would even show the slightest resistance, goodbye. You're welcome. Okay. Yeah, that's a smart girl. Come on closer.
Yeah. American soldiers rescue you.
I will be eternally grateful. There's no other words. I mean, it was a miracle that's written in the Bible. I don't know how else to phrase it. I don't want anybody to experience it, but when we saw those two young boys, I think they were as old as we were. I mean, you know, in the wartime, 19-year-old boys were in the service. So they were maybe 19 years old. So they were as kids as we were, and they were crying when we were crying. So that explains to you how I felt and they felt. Yeah, it is an unimaginable gratefulness. I mention them every single time. Yes, ma'am.
Two summers ago, we had the German choir visit Davison, and they needed to have their people put up in private homes. And I had two young teenage girls with me. My friend put up the choir director, the accompanist, and her husband at her house. My son had three young men out to his house.
That's
and they
great.
Were very interesting young men and women. It was a very nice experience.
Great. Yeah. I love to hear that.
Yeah, it was very nice. One young man lived in a 300-year-old house. Like my son says, in Michigan or in America, they tear everything down if it's that old. And over here, then this other kid was with my son. His parents lived in Berlin when the wall came down.
Oh, so, those were great days when the wall came
down. So it was a real nice experience having those young German people here.
Yeah, now they're really, now let me put it in one word. Germany today is not the Nazi era. Okay,
weren't all Nazis back then either. You know, a lot of the a lot of the Germans were hurting
that's how
as
the
bad
country
as
was.
Everybody.
Yeah, thank you for sharing.
Yes,
it was kind of ironic today that the lead story in the New York Times was about this chauffeur. Do you know what that is? It's a horn.
Yes.
And
the holidays are coming.
This horn was used to call the prisoners to prayer. Did you hear that? Ever hear that?
No, I wasn't aware of that.
The Russians were coming in and they were moving the prisoners out of camp.
Wartime, yeah.
And the person that had this, I don't know how they hid it from the soldiers, but in this story, he didn't realize, he knew that they had to march a long ways. And so he gave this horn, and they showed a picture of it. And I thought about coming and listening to you. And this, I believe that they were Hungarian.
Could be.
And he gave this horn to this other person, and a granddaughter is giving that horn to the museum in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. They're going to put it in the museum. But it was really, if anybody gets the New York Times, it was really an interesting story.
Oh, I have to check on that. Thank you so much for sharing. So, yes, ma'am.
I happen to have read a book a few years ago by Gertrude Wiseman Klein. Have you heard? She's a Holocaust survivor.
Yeah.
She spoke when I took my grandchildren to see The Diary of Anne Frank. She wrote a book called A Boring Evening at Home. In it, she recounts when she was, she's Polish, when she was liberated from the camp, the first thing she did was point to her arm and say to the American, I'm Jewish, you know. And he said, so am I. and she married him.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful? Well, you know, love conquers all. Okay, well, I guess we fulfilled everybody's request. I thank you humbly for sharing the evening with us, and continue enjoying freedom. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Oh, come on. Sit down. Sit down. Sit down. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
And let's conclude with the Lord's blessing. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord let his face shine upon you, be gracious to you. The Lord look upon you kindly and give you peace. This prayer we pray forever and ever. Amen. Shalom, and please enjoy visiting with Magda and one another. Thank you for being here. God be with you.